We are the most beautiful creatures in the whole world. Practical.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
Because I'm not a nigger. I'm a man. But if you think I'm a nigger, it means you leave.
And bring about the freedom of these people by any means necessary.
This is the Black Our Story podcast. Welcome back to another episode of the Black Our Story podcast. Golf claps, golf claps. A show dedicated to unlearning America and relearning the truth about history and black history. Because if women want any rights more than they's got, why don't they just take them and not be talking about it? That's not me. That's Sojourner Truth. But I am your host, Marquise. And we have another super dope, amazing ass story for you today. But before we get into that, per usual, as always, I just wanted to say thank you to the folks that still surprisingly still discovering the list, still sharing it from slavery to George Floyd. Definitely more than amazing to see that the last 2 years of it's really a passion project. I'm not a historian. I just like this stuff and I needed to make sense of it all. Really cool to see that the past 2 years of all that is just coming together and reached so many people. And hopefully it's helped y'all win some arguments. Really keep your mental peace, because arguing with people who just don't get it or who don't want to get it, you know, really, really debate folks who may be open to change. Otherwise, it gets exhausting. And then you feel like you lost, even though you have every fact in the world. It's never enough. So keep your mental peace, please. That's super important, especially right now. Huge thank you to all the folks that still following the movement on IG. Black_our story. Thank y'all so much. When I say I appreciate literally every single comment, every DM, I read it all. Good, bad, ugly. Mostly it's all good, though. I haven't really seen much of anything bad. So that's... maybe that means I'm doing something right. I do my best to fact check every single thing. I don't want to steer you guys wrong. But I appreciate everything. Really do. I started this thing on April 29th of 2018. Literally one day after the great director John Singleton passed. So for those who don't know who John Singleton is, you probably know his movies. He's the guy that made Boys in the Hood, Poetic Justice, Higher Learning, Rosewood. Please don't watch that one unless you're ready to be angry for the entire week. Baby Boy, Shaft, Four Brothers, Too Fast, Too Furious. I know y'all know that one. The amazing show on FX called Snowfall. So just an incredible storyteller. And so if you've made it to the bottom, which I don't know if you have, but if you made it to the very first post of the Black Our Story IG page, that's why his picture is the very first post on there. It was almost like, you know, an ode to him, an honor to him. It's super weird. Celebrity deaths are really weird to me, you know, because I don't know these people. I've never met them. I've never seen them in person. I've never done... you know, you get a TV glimpse of them or maybe on the internet, but that's, you know, you don't know these people at all. And it hits you in a certain way, you know. I felt like sad when I caught the news on the phone. I felt like, man, like it was a huge blow to not only just black cinema and black storytelling, but just humanity and a person, because we don't get that honest narrative, I feel like, from certain people. Using their art and using their passion and their drive and their talents to really push certain stories and certain narratives. And then I kind of realized, you know, like, damn, I'm sad, or I'm upset, or I'm bothered, or whatever the case may be, because it really shows you the impact that these people had. So beyond just being a celebrity, it really shows you how effective these people have made their platform to be just for, you know, this certain community or this country or this world even. So for me, I knew I had to, you know, after Mr. Singleton had passed, I knew it hit me that I was like, I got to do something. I don't know what it is. I didn't know it was going to be this. at all. I had no idea that I was going to put this page together, but I just kind of was like, I want to do something. I need to fill that void. I want to continue to help out, tell our stories in the same way that he did, in the same way that Boys in the Hood still affects me today. You know, and that being an honest, raw narrative of what went on in one certain part of the country and of the Black community, but how it can resonate and how it can hit so many other people from so many different angles. So, man, I remember that post. I posted John Singleton the day after, and it got 37 likes. And I was, for me, I don't aim too high with this thing. It was like, okay, it was a passion project. I literally had no plans on any of this. The next post, I don't even remember what it was. The second post after that, it got like 50, maybe like Harry Tubman or something. I don't know. I got like 51 likes. And again, I'm cool with that, because for me, if one person learns something, I'm happy. Like, man, that's one more person that's educated. Maybe they can go on and bear some fruit. And I've always been like that, really, you know. So fast forward to today, you know, to a little over a year, man, and it's overwhelming, man. I think last time I saw the James Meredith, the March Against Fear, and the and when he integrated University of Mississippi, that post, thank y'all for hitting the like and comment on that as well, but that post reached almost 20,000 people. So I'm hoping I'm making John Singleton proud. I'm humbled to just be a part of the conversation of people that's just kind of pushing some history. I think it's cool. So I'm just glad that people are, you know, finding it cool again. Make history great again. Black history at that. So I'm rambling. We can blame that on the scotch. But so you guys are here for Black History. So let's get to it. I got super dope story, man. The last time we met, the last time we talked, we talked about the great ass escape of Helen and William Craft. You can check that episode out. It's incredible. The bravery of people. And I've been like, as much as I said, no, I think I said on the last one, like I think I said I'm tired of slave movies, or I don't like seeing them, or I still watch them because I still feel like I have to. I have to give, because these are very real people that lived in a very real time of America, and I have to give them due diligence to really understand and try my best to understand that struggle. I can't sit in this privilege or this comfort of saying, nah, that's too hard to watch. That's a privilege for me to say that. And these people actually live that. So the least I can do is sit there and watch a visual or read the narrative or really just dive into what happened, because it makes me appreciate my today. And so I've been incredibly fascinated, not just from your stereotypical, the horror stories that we, you know, we're all familiar with, but really those ones that, you know, like the Craft, like the Henry Box Brown, those creative, ingenious, intelligence, the witty, just purely charismatic stories that we don't get. And the ones that there, you know, so many just, you think about prisoners today and the Invisible Ink and how they do things in prison today. Like, there are literal geniuses, you can consider them, that are in prison today that are just happen to be surrounded by a situation or chased by a problem. And so you can factor that into those that were enslaved as well, and the things that they, the things that they put together and they did successfully. Again, a man transferred himself in a box for freedom. So you know, because I think too often we just get depicted as these like gospel singing, cotton bagging, just fork, knife, food table, silent, just objects that are there for just, you know, we put pictures on our walls now, and then it was just slaves that were there to fill the room, fill the void. But we were, you know, they were incredibly so much more than that, than who, and so much more than the term slave. And so I know there's a whole lot of, you know, narrative on just saying the word slave, that they were enslaved people, but the point is that they were human beings and they had thoughts, they had feelings, they had emotions, they had love, they had tears, they had fears, and they were smart and they were intelligent. And, you know, but because they weren't seen as any of those things, because they were considered less than human, because of that, white slave owners discussed everything around their slaves. Everything. They never actually took into account how intelligent their enslaved folks were. And so with two observant ears, they listened to every single conversation and they learned from them. They studied them. They committed everything to memory. And then they pass it around the plantation or the farm. And anything that might have gave them the slightest advantage or leverage or opportunity to make their situation better, they did that based on what they were getting. So there was a huge network that was happening on right there on those individual plantations. More so, even more brave, is what, you know, Elizabeth Freeman did, who's what we're going to talk about today. Elizabeth Freeman, Elizabeth Ashley, but something so crazy and bold, I don't even know how it happened still. I mean, it happened, but I don't even... It's just crazy that it happened in that time. So we're going to get to it. So she sued the entire state of Massachusetts demanding her freedom. So let's roll into it. Elizabeth Freeman. So I'm going to start off with a quote. She said, Anytime while I was a slave, if 1 minute's freedom had been offered to me, 1 minute, and I had been told I must die at the end of that minute, I would have taken it. Just to stand 1 minute on God's earth, a free woman, I would. That, powerful. Elizabeth Ashley, 1744. That's the time frame we're going to go back to. All right, 1744. This is a couple years before the American Revolution starts. All right, and then we're going to open up our Google Maps and we're going to go to this random ass spot in New York called Claverack. I don't even know if I'm saying that right because I'm from the South. It could be Claverack. It could be Claverack. If you're from there, you're familiar with there, please hit me up with a DM voice memo thing and let me know. I did look on the map. It's south of Albany, New York, if that means anything to you New York people, because it doesn't mean anything to me as a Southern person. Anyway, Elizabeth Bett, they called her Bett Freeman, and her sister Lizzie. So they were both born into slavery on this Dutch farm, this guy named Peter Hoogeboom, right? Well, Peter's daughter, her name was Hannah. She actually got engaged and married to this guy named John Ashley, war hero, super popular person in Western Massachusetts, John Ashley. Elizabeth, when she got, she actually was given as a wedding gift. So she was 7 years old. Her and her sister were given to the daughter and the man she married as a wedding gift, which is also completely crazy. And I know I'm saying that very super nonchalant, but I just want to pause to say that humans were being given as wedding gifts, not forks and plates and, you know, little other little cutleries and charcuterie boards. No, humans were given as wedding gifts. Remember that. She then moved with the family, the new family, to a town called Sheffield, Massachusetts. And this is where she lived until 1781. She remained a slave there. So from 1744, and then she got a wedding gift at 7 years old, and until 1781, she remained a slave in the town of Sheffield, Massachusetts. Now, historical documents about her life says that she was super clever, incredibly clever, courageous, strategic, witty, smart. Everything we don't see or don't readily attribute, one, when we hear the word slave, during that time. And our story definitely proves that. One example. One time, she actually stood up to Hannah. Remember, Hannah's the daughter that she got sold to. Hannah Ashley. Hannah was cruel as hell. Cruel to her slaves. Abusive. Mean. Just evil. And one day, just in a random ass angry fit, Hannah went over to the oven, grabbed a hot iron shovel, and she was ready to hit Elizabeth's sister, Lizzie. And as soon as she swung, Elizabeth jumped in to protect her, blocking the strike. The red hot coals burned so deep into Elizabeth's arm that it actually went through the bone and it never healed. Never healed. Now I want to tell y'all that's sad and that's definitely, but I want to tell y'all the really dope part about this story. I want you to listen to how bold this is. I need you to first understand that this is an enslaved woman during slavery, where reading a letter or even sneezing wrong can get you lynched. Okay, you can literally do nothing and you're out of there. And what does Elizabeth do? Not only does she dive in and protect her sister, nor does she cover her arm up with, you know, some long sleeve shirt or dress or whatever and apologize for falling in the way. Miss Ashley, I'm so sorry. It was an act. Nope, none of that. She left her wound visible as evidence of her mistreatment to not only the rest of the farm to tell y'all how Miss Ashley was and what she was doing around here, but also as a mirror, also to let Ashley, you know as a vivid reminder of her cruelty. Every single day she had to look at that, every day, because Elizabeth worked in the house. Every day she saw that mark. And after that, they said Ashley never laid a hand on her or Lizzie again. And the audacity and the bravery and just the subtle ways that they stood up, you know, to their oppressors in a certain way. And that was some of the same courage that led her to choosing her own fate. You know, again, despite her situation. Well, we're going to fast forward 31 years later when America, well, 13 colonies in America found themselves gearing up for a very historic time. Now, this one we definitely know. We were taught this in the history books, the American Revolution. So it's about 1773. All right. And the colonists want their freedom from the Brits. Now, you got to remember, the colonists are tired of living under the oppressive rule of someone else. Go figure. And they want their voice heard. They want what? They want representation. You remember that whole thing? Representation in the government. You gotta remember, all the decisions made about America are taking place overseas in England. That's where we get the whole no taxation without representation thing. They had no say-so or nothing. Well, it just so happened that Elizabeth's owner, John Ashley, remember I said he's a super big important person in Massachusetts. Well, he was a respected judge. He was this lawyer. He was a political activist as well. And he wanted his damn freedom from the Brits as well. In fact, he was so respected that the Sheffield Declaration was written at his house. Whoa, 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 whoa. DJ Scratch, quick pause for the cause. What is the Sheffield Declaration? Well, I'm glad you asked. The old Sheffield Doc is actually the very first document to declare that man was free, and it's the one that actually inspired the Declaration of Independence. Something else they also didn't tell you in the history books, and this is like regular white history books. What they I've never heard of the Sheffield Declaration, but it was actually a document that came before the Declaration of Independence. It was actually written 3 years before Thomas Jefferson penned his version and basically plagiarized that whole life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness thing. So that part was actually in, it's actually called Pursuit of Property. But then, you know, if you were taking a college class and you were to plagiarize that and all you did was change happiness to property, the teacher is probably still going to fail you on that if you didn't source it properly. So Thomas Jefferson, clearly not sourcing properly, gets all the credit. Massachusetts gets left out. The Sheffield document never makes your history book, and here we are. But in that room, in that house, in the Ashley house in Massachusetts, I need you to visualize this. You have 11 people that were tired as hell of living under British rule that are writing this declaration saying that we are men, we are free, all men are created equal, we want our rights, we want our freedom. And who's the fly that's literally standing on the wall, serving drinks back and forth, picking up plates, bringing more ink, up and downstairs, Elizabeth, Ashley, hearing all of this. The Sheffield Declaration is also used 7 years later after it was written in the Massachusetts Constitution. The most important verse, mankind in a state of nature are equal, free, and independent of each other and have a right to the undisturbed enjoyment of their lives, their liberty, and their property. That's the biggest part of the Sheffield Declaration. That was written in the Ashley House where Elizabeth Freeman was enslaved, and historians believe that she was there to listen to all of that. Back to the story. Now, again, remember I said slave owners talked about everything. They debated everything. Slaves in the house didn't exist. They were like, I'm talking in this room by myself with these pictures around me. I'm not expecting anybody in any of these pictures to listen to anything I'm talking about. Clearly, it's not like Unsolved Mysteries where I felt like everything was staring at you. Back in the old one, not this new one on Netflix, right? Well, it just so happened that Elizabeth had a front row seat to the revolution. She was hearing these words like equal, freedom, undisturbed enjoyment. And then she heard them again in 1780 when she went to the town square and the Massachusetts Constitution was being read aloud to the townspeople for the first time. And after that, she said, I'm done. Damn all this. Y'all said, I am done. Y'all said, I'm free. I heard it. I've heard it time and time again. I keep hearing this word in the house. Something's up. I'm about to get my freedom too, damn it. And so as with all the men around her declared, you know, their freedom, Elizabeth knew she had to get some of that. She knew she deserved the same. So what'd she do? She marched right over to this young lawyer's house. That gentleman's name is Theodore Sedgwick. She knocked on that man's door and she said, hey, sir, I want to talk about some hypocrisy that's been going on around this town. And you know what else I want to do? I want to sue the state of Massachusetts for my freedom. I thank you kindly. Her exact words, according to documents, was, and I quote, I heard that paper read yesterday that says all men are created equal and that every man has a right to freedom. I ain't no dumb critter. Won't the law give me my freedom? That's apparently what she told Sedgwick. And you know what Sedgwick did? Sedgwick said, yeah. He actually agreed. He said, you know what? You do deserve it. Now, Theodore Sedgwick, he's not only the great-great-great-great-grandfather of actress Kira Sedgwick from The Closer, but he's also one of the men that helped write the Sheffield Declaration, the Sheffield Deck. That's how Elizabeth knew who he was. He was in the house that night when they put that document together. So he figured he, of all people among the 11 that were in there that night that signed that paperwork, he'd get it. He'd understand. He's a young lawyer. He seems like he's down for the cause. Let me try my luck. And it worked out. And Sedgwick, believing in the words of the document that he wrote, he agreed to help her. And he also agreed to help another man that was enslaved at the Ashley House by the name of Brom to get both of their freedom. Now, historians say that he added in Brom, who was a male slave, just to make sure that the case wasn't dismissed simply because Elizabeth was a woman. Because you got to remember, women, white or black, didn't have no damn rights either during this time. So let me clarify two important things real quick. Because I know this story we're not even there yet, but I know it may sound weird. It may sound like, man, how's she doing all this? She's walking in the town. She's going knocking on people's doors and saying she wants her free. Like, who is this woman? Yeah, she's black, 100%. She wasn't like a quadroon. She didn't look like a white person. She looks very much so black, according to the paintings. Number one, how the hell was she moving around like this? Well, Elizabeth was enslaved to one of the most powerful men in Western Massachusetts. And as a house slave, she was a nurse, she was a midwife, she took care of their kids, and she took care of the home. She was respected in Sheffield, and her privileges, she was known also in the town. So her privileges and her communication with white people went way beyond your average idea of what an enslaved person could be. And again, this is the North, all right? This isn't the Deep South. It was It was slavery still all the same, but the Deep South and the North was two different scenarios. Number two, how the hell was Massachusetts lawyers so cool with all this? What kind of a lawyer, a white lawyer, just has a woman knock on her door and say, all right, let's do it. Well, I'm glad you asked. So Massachusetts law was super odd as hell. While it definitely allowed slavery, it also recognized slaves as both property and persons, which actually allowed slaves to actually sue their slave owners. Mind blowing. Unheard of. So in 1780, the year that the Massachusetts Constitution was actually written, it was the same year that almost 30 slaves had sued for their freedom. Now, these slaves that sued for their freedom originally were arguing for like technicalities, right? They were saying, hey, my slave owner promised me that I was going to be free on Tuesday. Damn it, it's Friday and I'm still here. Sued, freedom won, you lied to him, here we are. Or they were saying, hey, I was purchased illegally by this guy. I don't even know who this man is. I really belong to this guy, but that guy's dead maybe. So this, I don't really even belong to this guy. Okay, boom, let's look at that case off. Well, here's where Elizabeth, her case was completely different, because she wasn't arguing technicalities. She wasn't arguing that she had ever been lied to or promised her freedom and she never got it. She wasn't arguing that she had ever been purchased illegally by the Ashley. She was always a wedding gift. All her paperwork was legit. She was arguing that the entire institution of slavery was wrong and called the entire existence of slavery into question based on the Massachusetts documents, the Massachusetts Constitution written that year. If all men are created equal and they get to enjoy everything, then damn it, so do I. Right or wrong, do black lives matter or do they not? And Sedgwick was like, weirdly, by the way, super side note, Sedgwick also owned slaves. So it gets really weird on him owning slaves, but also representing a slave. But he had kind of a bigger picture. He wanted the whole North to be together collectively fighting against the British. So this is why he kind of changed his tune. Random side note, but anyway, 1781, the next year, Sedgwick files something called a writ of replevin, which usually deals with like releasing property. But in this case, it basically meant Elizabeth's slave owners had to release the two enslaved persons in question, Elizabeth and Brom. And this case is actually known, you can look it up, the case is actually known as Brom and Bet versus Ashley. So it was officially owned. Ding, ding, ding. Sedgwick goes into court. Court comes, growls up. Supposedly it was called the trial of the century. You got two slaves suing for their freedom in 1781. Remember, slavery doesn't end until 1865. We are nowhere near that. Nowhere near that. And the audacity of two slaves to say that they don't belong here and to let me out. And now they're suing the state of Massachusetts for that. Brom and Bet versus Ashley. Sedgwick argues that slavery is now incompatible with the new Massachusetts Constitution. If all men are created equal, so are slaves. And I don't know what part of all good white people in Massachusetts this town was in, but a jury of 12 local farmers, all men and all white, actually ruled in favor of Brom and Elizabeth. And not only did they rule in favor of these two, they actually awarded them their freedom, obviously, and 30 shillings. They got 30 shillings. Sorry for all your troubles over the past 30 years. Here's $248 in today's money. Come on, man. Freedom by the rule of law, unheard of. Heard of. So what the very first thing Elizabeth did was change her name. She changed her name, her last name. So that's why I kept going back and forth between Elizabeth Ashley, which was her slave name, her slave owner's last name, and she changed it to celebrate her new status, Freeman. Elizabeth Freeman. Ironically, and maybe a little bit quite hilarious, but Colonel Ashley, after the case is over, after she wins, she gets her freedom. Colonel Ashley, like I said, he was a war hero, but John Ashley actually begged her to come back. He wrote her letters, told her to come back several times. Hey, come on back and work for us as a paid servant. She declined that phone call the same way I do Sally Mae at times. And she chose to be a paid domestic worker in Sedgwick's home, the same man who had just represented her in court. She actually chose to go work for him as a paid domestic worker in their household. And actually, after some years, she was able to save up enough money and buy her own house to live with their children. 9 years after her case in 1790, Massachusetts no longer had any slaves, which made it the very first state to comprehensively abolish slavery. Comprehensively. Vermont usually gets that title. They usually do. However, and I actually even think I put that on the list as Vermont is the first state to abolish slavery. However, there is a catch to that. Vermont did abolish slavery. However, they only abolished slavery for folks over the age of 18 and 21. Women were 18, men were 21. Massachusetts was the first state to free everybody. No age restrictions. That was thanks to Elizabeth Freeman and her case going up and saying that if you guys are going to put out this Constitution, it has to apply to slaves as well. Thanks to her, Massachusetts solved their slave issue. Elizabeth Freeman died on December 28, 1829. Hundreds actually attended her funeral, and she was buried in the Sedgwick family plot, which is in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. She's actually the only non-Sedgwick buried in the quote-unquote inner circle of the Sedgwick family plot. And her tombstone is actually still present today. It's actually still there today. And it reads, let me quote, "She was born a slave and remained a slave for nearly 30 years. She could neither read nor write. Yet in her own sphere, she had no superior or equal. She neither wasted time nor property. She never violated a trust nor failed to perform a duty. And in every situation of domestic trial, she was the most efficient helper and the tenderest friend. Good mother, farewell." That is on Elizabeth Freeman's tombstone. Still there today. The entire history of her life, she couldn't read or write, so she never wrote it down. But so we know this story was actually recorded by Theodore Sedgwick's daughter, Catherine. Catherine actually became a famous author after she published her book in 1853. It was titled Slavery in New England, which actually details the life of Elizabeth Freeman and Catherine's father, the hero, of course, of her story. Theodore Sedgwick. Incredible. The time period, if you put yourself there, trying to visualize, trying to even grasp a slave suing an entire state for her freedom and actually winning. Mind-blowing in itself. But just how she even grasped the knowledge to do that, just being a fly on the wall, listening and soaking up, being a sponge, and really just learning from some super historical, I mean, the Sheffield Declaration, which led to the Declaration of Independence. So the same document that contradicted the entire United States and said all men are created equal, except, you know, almost 4 million slaves in the country. She used the predecessor, the Sheffield Declaration, to actually win her freedom in Massachusetts. Is completely just a mind-blowing story. That is Elizabeth Freeman. And the story of how she sued for freedom and how Massachusetts abolished slavery based on her trial. Thank y'all so much for listening to this episode of Black Our Story. Be sure to tap in on iTunes, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your listening pleasures so you don't miss any future episodes. You can also tap into the Instagram page again at @black_ourstory for more Black history such as this one. And remember, Black history is American history, and American history is all of us. Until next time, I'm your host, Marquise, and I'm out this thing. Golf claps.